from the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers, and I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Before I introduce today's interview, I would just like to ask a favor. Anyone who's listening, could you please go to the place where you find Write the Book, rate the show, and write a review. I would love to hear what you think, and suggestions are always welcome. Thanks very much. Today on Write the Book, you will hear an interview from the archives with Carolyn Conger, PhD. We discussed her book, Through the Dark Forest, Transforming Your Life in the Face of Death, published by Plume. Carolyn Conger, PhD, is a consultant and teacher who conducts seminars internationally in psychological growth, healing, dream work, intuition, creativity, and spirituality. She has lived with tribal societies throughout the world, studying their healing and metaphysical arts. From her research in psychoimmunology and energy, human energy fields, she also teaches mind-body techniques for optimum health. Her doctorate is in clinical psychology. A practical and healing guide to becoming whole and finding peace during the most difficult time of life, Through the Dark Forest assures readers that it's never too late to transform your life. When we are confronted with the end of life, we must tackle medical decisions, attend to family and legal matters, and grapple with overwhelming questions, such as how do I manage each day knowing that death is near? What has life up until now meant? What should I do with the time that remains? Carolyn Conger, PhD, has spent 30 years working with people who are imminently facing death. Drawing on her research and experience, she shows how we can use active imagination, self-hypnosis, energy medicine, and dream work to begin the soul work that can both prepare us for death and enrich our lives. Profound and paradigm-shifting, Through the Dark Forest can help us all transform our lives, no matter how long we have to live. I spoke to Carolyn Conger in 2014 when her book came out, and I began by reading a sentence from the book's introduction. The more we participate in writing the end of our own story, the more satisfied we are with the arc of our life. So we began with my asking her to talk about this. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
One of the things that happens at the end of the life to a lot of people is they surrender their sense of being in charge of their lives. And partly it's because they don't know how to be at the end of their lives. If they're unfamiliar with medical treatment, maybe they haven't been ill before, and all of a sudden here are these authorities telling them what they need to do, etc. They often give up their own authority. Mm. And that leads to a sense of powerlessness and loss of meaning, etc. So it's really important to be able to be in charge, I feel, as much as you can towards the end of life. And of course there are instances where we can no longer be in charge because we're incapacitated. But if we take care of giving information about what our wishes are before that time comes through a will and perhaps writing down some things for your family, then we still get to be treated the way that we would like to be.
Yeah. How is it, Carolyn, that you got involved in this aspect of therapeutic work, helping people with this stage of life?
Well, I was ill a lot myself, so I understood some of the challenges. Ill a lot as a young person. And then when I started my practice, it seemed like a lot of ill people came, and then word of mouth spread. So it's really been word of mouth that more and more I work with people at the end of life or with serious illness. And I think it's... I get referred a lot because, you know, I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds also like in some cases you've formed extraordinary bonds with people and have traveled to see them at the end of their lives and to be with them. Is your work all over the country, all over the world, or mostly local to your area?
Right now it's mostly local. I also do some phone work, too. A few years back I did travel to different parts of the country and consult, et cetera. One of the most interesting was is I got invited to go to a children's hospital in Canada, I think it was Toronto, and taught the mothers there how to work with their babies who were had cancer in the unit, and different techniques of soothing them and how to think about it and how much their attitudes and their state of being influenced their children's health.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Especially with little children, I would think it would be so hard to calm them when they're in pain, especially.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah. I was just going to read one other line from the introduction. I just find this so interesting. In the Western world, death and the dying process have been erased from the cycle of life. I think that's so true. You know, I'm so aware when we travel that it seems like other cultures accept death as part of life, and they don't try to hide it away. Even just the images that you see out in the world, you know, the butcher's shops, they don't make it all look like it's just born in saran wrap, you know.
Right.
Everything is much more accepted and seen to be all part of one. So why do you think that's the case for this part of the world?
You know, it's a very good question. I think that part of it is our separation from nature. Unless you live in the Midwest or maybe up where you are, you don't in LA anyway, you don't see a lot of animals, and certainly trees are kind of scarce too unless you make an effort to go be with them. So I think when we're not around nature that is going through its cycles and we're emphasizing more the intellect and technology, that we lose that connection to nature and to the cycles of life.
That's a really good point. I've never thought about that before. But as a country gets more citified, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the approaches in the book. You talk a lot about deep breathing and meditation as very helpful exercises. I thought that might be a good starting point because a lot of the other more specific exercises will encompass deep breathing and meditation as well. So how do you start to talk to a patient about using deep breathing and meditation to help themselves?
Well, I don't talk about it. I say, you want to try something? And they'll say, sure. And I'll explain it, and then I say, you know, it's an experiment, you know, because sometimes when people are in pain, they don't want to try anything. They don't want to move. They don't want to try anything new. But I said, let's just try it, and you're in charge. If you're uncomfortable, we'll stop. And then I do it with them and talk them through it with a very calm, soothing voice. And then they begin to see, oh, yeah, my head kind of let go. It was tense. Now my head let go. Oh. And especially about pain relief, when they can immediately feel through a few minutes of work of changing focus, attention, and using imagination to relieve that pain, then they're sold, and they'll do it on their own.
And do you teach family members how to work with them as well?
I'll teach anybody.
Sure. Well, do you find that that's helpful when it's more than one person, when it's not just the patient on his or her own, but that there are other people sort of leading them? Or is it really just having that inner focus that's so helpful?
I like to teach the person first,
yeah,
and make sure that the skill is ingrained, and then I teach the family members. And it depends on the wishes of the client, because sometimes the client says, you know, I want to do this on my own. I don't want them involved. I want them to just be happy with me, et cetera. So in all of it, I follow the client's wishes.
Yeah.
And if there is something that is not helpful that they have as a belief system or some objection to exploration, then I gently suggest that we just try it for a few seconds and see how it goes. Mm-hmm. And they'll usually do that.
I wondered a little bit about my father died a couple of years ago, and he would have been so resistant, I think, to anything that he saw as alternative. And I wondered, you know, do you find that your patients are perhaps more open to these exercises that they might have rejected before they knew they were dying? Do you think that that opens people's minds?
It wakes us up. I mean, when we get that pronouncement of, you know, this is a terminal illness, you have maybe 6 months, maybe a year, or 2 months, or whatever, it wakes us up. It's a very interesting thing that happens. I've seen it over and over, that it's as if all internal resources are mobilized, and they're willing to try anything. And people who never would have explored alternative therapies or mind-body treatments like I do, they're open to it. They'll try anything because it's, you know, life is at stake.
Right, right. A large part of the book is devoted to helping people get to know themselves better in a more honest way before they can move forward into their next stage. And I'm wondering, do you think most Americans have this deficit of understanding, not knowing themselves well, or do you find that it's a real, there's a real variation between the people that you meet who you know, who needs to work more on this than someone else?
Well, I think all of us can get to know ourselves better. And it, even those who have had lots of therapy and are up to date with who they are, there's always more to discover. It's not just problems. You know, there's something in Jungian psychology called the golden shadow. The shadow is the unknown part of ourselves, and the golden shadow is all of the good things that we don't know about ourselves, all of the positive resources. Maybe it might be an ability to write poetry towards the end of life or something like that. So there's always something to discover about ourselves.
And I would think that what you said in the last thing that we talked about, the fact that having death be so much closer than we've realized before will mobilize us and encourage us to get to know ourselves better.
Yes. It's as if, you know, the old addict of about, you know, we only have today, that's all that's guaranteed, or every moment counts, those kind of adages become very true. Life becomes a lot sharper, and we are more present when we realize that time is limited.
Yeah, yeah. You tell individual stories of people that you've worked with. You tell the story of a Hopi woman named Arika. That's her name in the book. I don't know if you've changed people's names.
Yes, I have.
And you talk about how she had a lot of, I think probably well-founded but still not helpful, bitterness and prejudice against white people. And this magnified when she was ill. Do you find that a lot of bitterness and anger comes out of people in the throes of the fear of death? And then talk a little bit about avoiding these downsides.
Well, there are a lot of emotions that come out for most people if they're, you know, open towards the end. And you know, you've heard about all the different stages of death and stages of accepting death or not accepting death. And emotions become magnified towards the end, especially in the beginning when you first get that pronouncement. There's anger, there's fear, there's depression, there's uncertainty. There's a kind of greediness for love from those around you. There's a desire to leave something in the world. Those really become stronger. So depending on the person, one might be angry all the time. One might be fearful all the time or even just anxious. So they become magnified towards the end.
Yeah.
And the way to deal with them is the way that anybody should deal with them. Number one, you recognize it. You say, okay, this is happening to me. This is anger. And secondly, you begin to work with the particulars of it. You begin to say, okay, am I really angry at the nurse who's coming in here every day, or am I angry at my illness and the fact that I'm going to die? So awareness comes into it. And recognizing that we do have choice, I believe in the ability to express anger or depression or whatever is certainly very healthy. And yet there comes a time where it's not, because we don't see any alternative and we get stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the techniques is to be able to use imagery to take oneself out of that after we've recognized it and thought about it and notice the triggers. Maybe the nurse reminds me of, you know, some teacher I had at school who was mean to me, and so this anger about my illness comes out on her because her face is the same as my teacher's, etc. So it's awareness. It's becoming aware of what the variables are that contribute to my anger.
Yeah. One thing that I really appreciated about the way you approached the book was that some of the stories, they're very hopeful and they're very, you know, emotionally gratifying to see how people have worked through some of these emotions and had very peaceful and even, I don't know if you'd say joyful deaths, but maybe, I mean, in some cases. And then you also included, you know, one or two stories anyway of people who had not very pleasant endings. And I thought that was very real. And I really appreciated that. It's not just, you know, this is if you go this route, it's all going to be good news, you know.
Right.
I just thought that made it a much more honest book.
Yeah.
How hard is this work for you? I was wondering when I was reading this.
Sometimes if I do too much at one time, work with too many people or too long during a day, I'll get really tired. But usually it's very inspirational. Mm-hmm. And I take a great deal of time to, do fun things and personal things. And I try to have only two clients at the same time, no more. That's about all I can handle.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is more. I do lots of other things, too. I mean, you know, I read, and I have clients who don't have these problems, so, and I do teaching. I teach groups a lot, and that's quite different.
Yeah. So one of the specific aspects of this work is called voice dialogue. I found voice dialogue very interesting, and I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that.
Voice dialogue is based on the idea that we all have separate selves within us, subpersonalities. And subpersonality theory in psychology has been around a long time. Voice dialogue is a very specific form of that, in which we sit down and I have someone sit on the couch and have them go into a very quiet state. We've talked about what the problem is that they're working with or the issue, and then I say, is there a part of you that is very young that's dealing with this problem? And then sometimes, you know, I ask the person to take on that personality. It's not acting. It seems like acting at first, but soon a true voice that is, for instance, just one of the many, a child voice within it says, yes, I'm really scared. And it's interesting to see the posture and the voice change when someone's in an altered state, like I put them into, as I put them into, and the information comes out that surprises everybody. And so then after we work with the child part of that person, I put them back into the person as we know them, the whole person who is, you know, walking around and alive today. And then we talk about that. What about that information that came out in your child part? And then we do the same with other parts that might come out. And it's not generated by me. It's generated by the client. It's a very natural process and very, very exciting to do.
Now, it sounds like that you do help them get there through, is it a sort of type of hypnosis?
An altered state. I wouldn't call it full hypnosis. No, it's a relaxed state.
Okay.
And using the imagination. And the information that comes out is really, really valuable, and it's quicker than most ways of working.
Okay. And how many of these altered selves do you find that people will tend to kind of step into to talk about they're going through?
I never do more than three or four. And sometimes there's only one, and sometimes there's none.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I've had a person who stayed in child for, I'd say maybe 20 minutes, but that's long, usually about 10 minutes or 15 minutes, because the discussion and the integration of the material is just as important as the exploration.
Okay.
And again, it feels like acting, but it's not.
Yeah.
Because people come up, they change profoundly.
You know, when I think about what's hard about the idea of dying, I think a lot of what I focus on is the emotional aspect of it. But you wrote about people who are in pain, and of course, this is just so huge. And, you know, being able to manage your emotional needs while you're in pain is always difficult, but particularly I would think in this situation. So I wonder if we can talk a little bit about that aspect of it, and also the specific exercise that you called the shuttle, which I thought was really interesting and sounded very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Pain is a great leveler. In our country, we tend to under-medicate, doctors do, and they're changing that. You know, we have a whole section of the medical profession dealing with palliative care, which mm-hmm. is, you know, pain management, et cetera. And the trick is to have just enough medication so that the person isn't suffering, but not enough to knock them unconscious all the time, so that they do have awareness towards the end if they wish it. The shuttle is an exercise that deals with attention. Where the pain is, where our attention is, that's where the energy goes. That's one way of talking about it. So if our attention is always on the pain, and we're going into the pain more and more, and being afraid and tightening up about it, then the pain gets worse. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to, in the exercise in the book, to go into the pain, to feel it fully, and then to place your attention somewhere else. I use a little symbols, a bells, and so I say, listen totally to this bell sound, and it's one that's drawn out very long, so it lasts a long time. Now go back to the pain. So back and forth between the pain and the bell sound, or any other sound that you pick. And after a while, they can't find the pain. And that's an amazing thing that happens. I don't know why that happens, but I discovered that one day.
Really interesting. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about writing and how important writing can be to a person who's preparing to die, and how does writing help?
Writing helps because it makes the thoughts real. It clarifies the thoughts. It can express beauty. People come up with beautiful poetry and letters to friends at the end. It's the whole art of creativity, of course, comes out through writing, and that's beautiful in itself. But also, the person can leave a legacy. The person can write down what they feel about each person, can write down wishes for their family, etc., and blessings. It's very wonderful. And the families look at those writings for years to come, and sometimes they're passed on through generations.
Mm, yeah, and that would help the people left behind.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I very much enjoyed talking to you today, and I wanted to mention that your book is called Through the Dark Forest, Transforming Your Life in the Face of Death. Carolyn Conger, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Shayla.
The book again is Through the Dark Forest, Transforming Your Life in the Face of Death by Carolyn Conger. You can learn more about her work at carolynconger.com. And from the Media Factory in the South End of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. So this week's Write the Book prompt was inspired by the book, Through the Dark Forest. No matter where you are in life, age-wise, health-wise, or otherwise, this week consider what you would say you've left unfinished so far in your life and what you would like to do about it. Maybe also keep in mind how you have navigated the pandemic and whether the past year and a half have made you feel more vulnerable, more energized, more fortunate feeling. Write about all the things that come up as you invite these thoughts and feelings. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. So I hope that you are healthy and well, that you're able to write and able to follow your favorite authors despite whatever their launches and book tours might look like. Authors can always use our support and each other's support, so try to follow the authors whose books are coming out, attend their events online and in person. It's a great thing to do. You know, also they are all doing all kinds of blog tours and book tours to the extent that they can, given the pandemic. So it's a wonderful thing to try to find your way to their books and events. If you are trying to write these days, I'll just remind you that the archives of Write the Book have all of the writing prompts that I offer each week listed on each week's show. So if you go to any particular week, you'll see where you press a button to listen to the interview for that week. But underneath that, there's also written out the podcast. There's the prompt for that week. And those hopefully will be helpful to you as you try to work. I'd love your feedback about the show. I said this at the very beginning. Let me know if you have feedback, if you have suggestions. You can email me them, or you can go to the place where you listen to your podcasts and you can rate and review Write the Book. You can also let me know if you have any events to announce. If you're an author, or if you're friend is an author and has an event coming up, even virtual events, that's fine too. Shoot me an email and I will try to read them if I have time that Monday before the event. Be sure to tell your friends about the show and about the podcast site, which is writethebook.podbean.com. And we're also on pretty much all the places where you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, all those sites. So you can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, which is shelaughswithoutus.com. My email is writethebook@gmail.com if you want to send me feedback without reading it on a site. Okay, that's about it. I am Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM WBTV-LP. Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.